In Milan, 68 came 5 years early, Franco. It was in January 63 that a group of students in the architecture department made demands for the reorganization of the course. No one listened. The strike began in February. They were young. They wanted to get out of the suffocating clutches of the academic world, no longer following the reactionary dictates of those who were still building things as if the war had never happened, as if the economic boom had never boomed. In Milan, only Ernesto Nathan Rogers managed to captivate them. As opposed to Cassi Ramelli and his neo-Renaissance Nea Viscosa headquarters on Corso di Porta Nuova. They were called Cortese, Faré, Stevan. There was that young man from Genoa who studied all day and worked in your studio at night. There was your son, Marco. The best of their generation in those years. They wanted to leave their time, to hear the voices of people who really made architecture. They wanted you, Franco. You, who had studied at the Polytechnic in the same years as Terragni, who had roamed Europe to get to know Mies van der Rohe and Le Corbusier. You had a bond with Edoardo Persico at Casabella, and with Giuseppe Pagano and Ignazio Gardella, you imagined the urban plan for a green Milan by seeking rational order to counter the disorder of historical cities. You were young hardliners. You wanted to give new arrivals to the city, essential, helpful, dignified housing to grant the city the visage of the century you were living. You were from Robbiate, from Brianza, Franco. Your father, Baldassarre, was an engineer who had invested in silkworms before the crisis of 29 swept everything away. In Milan, you always lived and worked in the Magenta Zone, the neighbourhood created by the Beruto Plan and so reviled by Magistretti that he considered it a zone created on the model of the French quarters, but without the nobility, the richness, the consistent materials and even the sense of humour of the quarters of Haussmann in Paris. You lived on Via de Togni at number 23 in one of the three buildings designed by Joe Ponti, the red one. Giovanni Romani lived at number 25. Practically in front of your house at 16 stood a building by Pier Giulio Magistretti, Vico's father. At the age of 26, you opened your first studio on Via Panizza, when you began to work on the new suburb with Renato Camus and Giancarlo Palanti. The Fabio Filzi zone, the Gabriele D'Annunzio zone, the Ettore Ponti area. You were an architect, a town planner, a designer. You never saw the difference. You thought, but really, that an architect should work on everything from the spoon to the city with the same rigour, the same commitment. You were looking for a method to apply equal for any scale, any social class. There was no difference between designing a house for the affluent or a subsidised housing project. Anti-genius by position, allergic to romantic flights of fancy, you believed in the praxis of the artisans, aware that it is possible to use a pencil as a sword. There was no room for mistakes. Less was more, as a professional practice, a moral expression. You hated waste, believing it was necessary to liberate resources for better distribution to all. You loved art, but you hated collecting, since the principle of possessions enslaves rather than making its advocates free. You designed houses for your whole life, yet you never owned one. The ventennial of fascism didn't prevent you from working, but it never understood you either. What was this way of designing by removing ornaments, breaking down the parts to reach the essence, and then putting them back together? Do you remember when you entrusted Anna Castelli Ferrieri with the dismantled prototype of your mitragliera, the lamp in the shape of a machine gun? During its transport by car, the fascist police stopped the driver, and it was not easy to explain that what was in the back was a lamp, not a weapon. During the war, you were evacuated to Piacenza, but every morning you reported to a makeshift studio with Enea Manfredini. To work, even though there were no clients. You studied, experimented, drew, refining your method. Italy had to be reconstructed to regain its dignity. In 1946, with Giancarlo Palanti, before his departure for Brazil, and Anna Castelli Ferrieri, you edited a special issue of Casabella on Giuseppe Pagano. Tortured by the fascist cops at Villa Triste, on Via Paolo Uccello, he was thrown into San Vittore and died at Mauthausen, where Gianluigi Banfi also passed away. One had to start all over again from their sacrifice, their teaching. You had few forms of recreation. You liked the mountains. You went with Albe Steiner, the nephew of Matteotti, to ski at Cervinia. You climbed on ice with Giuseppe Piro Pirovano, and you designed the refuge at Val Tournanche for him. You designed magic boxes in Rome, buildings in Reggio Emilia, the hot springs facility at Salso Maggiore. Caterina Marcenaro, with remarkable courage in those years, asked you to renovate the art gallery of Palazzo Bianco in Genoa, and then, a few years later, that of Palazzo Rosso. You didn't try to blend in, to imitate. You applied your method, to design piece by piece, in tune with your time. You in Genoa, Scarpa in Verona, and the studio BBPR in Milan inserted the contemporary in the antique without subjection, inventing modern museum design. You knew, ever since you had shown work at the Triennale or at the fair, that it was necessary to make people understand that the tradition is a reality, always new, that it is continued in the present precisely by the modern artists who add their creation to it every day. To make people understand that the problems of coherence between society and art are there in every time. In the meantime, Franca Helg had arrived in the studio. She was from St. Gallen, Nordic, tough, in a world of man. You liked how serious she was, Franco. You demanded rigor of those who worked with you. The studio was a place of silence, no music, no radio. You communicated by leaving notes on the drawing tables. Everyone, including you, wore a white coat. Physicians of form, scientists of substance. You had moved the studio to Via 20 Settembre. Later, in 1970, you brought it to Via Telesio, where it is still located today. Milan was changing, quickly, continuously. On 4th May 1957, the Metropolitana Milanese Company, the subway authority, began its first work site on Viale Monte Rosa. Amidst Olympic aches and urban plans from the fascist era, bombing, post-war reconstruction, new housing districts and subway lines under construction, Milan, in your period, was not a city, but an infinite, boundless construction site. It was a display of pride, the proving ground of a populace that seemed to be able to move in unison. Rather than the static image of the historical centre, the Milanese identified with the dynamism of the rising city. They wanted to live in a capital that could look with pride upon the world. The working-class city and the bourgeois city felt like parts of one single project. Construction everywhere, from near the cathedral all the way to the extreme boundaries of the Corpi Santi. And what held it all together, like the thread that holds the pearls, was precisely the construction of the subway system, which, however, was still without a soul. You took care of that, together with Franca Helg and Bob Norda. At the start, you did a small job of image consulting. That wasn't enough for you. You thought projects should be bounced on your knees, like a child. They needed nurturing to find the right meaning. You had to invent an underground landscape that would not be oppressive, to give a skin, the most extensive sensory organ, to a work of social architecture of daunting size. This was your most outstanding monument to democracy. Anti-rhetorical, anti-stylistic, made with innovative, industrial, replicable, homogeneous, recognizable materials. No set of all different stations to indulge the architect's fantasies. You are looking, as always, for elegance in the details. prefabricated silipol facing panels to form the interspace for the physical plant systems, floors in tiles of black bubble top rubber, Cerizzo Ghiandone marble for the stairs, railings in painted tubing. Bob Norda was a Dutchman who had studied with Rietveld. You two had no problems understanding each other when you coordinated the graphics, the image, the characters, the symbols and colors. A dark, vibrant orange, La Rossa, the red, was the nickname the Milanese gave to their subway line. It was your third Compasso d'Oro prize, the first for Norda, who, after La Rossa, was called in to redesign the signage of the subway systems of New York and Sao Paulo, taking your method out into the world. When the red line was opened, you had already been teaching in Venice for 15 years, brought there by Giuseppe Samonà. Your colleagues there were Giancarlo De Carlo, with whom you joked at lunch, or Carlo Scarpa, who kept on talking just as much as you kept silent. But 68 came 5 years early in Milan. The kids at the Polytechnic wanted you, Franco. You couldn't help but listen. Over the years, you put up with the confusion, the inferno the Polytechnic had become, the unreasonable suspension ordered in 1971 by the Ministry of Education, though you were in good company. Ludovico Belgioioso, Piero Bottoni, Guido Canella, Aldo Rossi, Carlo De Carli, Vittoriano Viganò, even the Dean Paolo Portoghesi. But in 64, you knew you had to return to Milan to teach those young people your meticulous, headstrong method, that of an artisan from Brianza, your human and design ethic. As you were doing with your son, who took part in the protests at the department in those years, and as you were doing with that student from Genoa who worked evenings in your studio, he has always acknowledged you as his mentor, the only one he ever really had. For him, yours was a school of patience. Years later, he would win a competition in Paris for a cultural center at the Beaubourg. His name is Renzo Piano.